Hi, I'm Mac.
Hi, I'm Abigail.
And this is Unsubs.
This is the podcast where we recap, rate, and review all 324 episodes of Criminal Minds. Today we're talking season 6, episode 1. I think it's The Longest Night, Our Longest Night. Some stupid shit.
It's a long night.
Wow, this is the first time you and I are recording in like a month and a half?
Something like that. It feels like a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, We had like an actual break, because sometimes we're like, we're on break, but then we're like just busting out episodes. And this time we decided not to do that. A lot has changed, girl.
Yeah, there's been a lot of things. Do we want to jump into like, are these our fun facts, or we just want to do like...
Well, yeah, but I think I did address this in our trivia episodes, but just a reminder, we are only going to be releasing one episode a week on Mondays for the foreseeable future. We hope to be able to pick it up latter half of season 6, but, you know, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and
I feel like we say that all the time, but it's true, you know?
It is true, and we are both busy, busy people.
Yeah, with jobs and life stuff that we'll get into. So bear with us. You know, there's so many episodes in our backlog. I'm sure you haven't listened to all of them. And if you have, good God, I'm sorry. But Abigail, tell us, like, what's going on? What have you been up to?
So I moved, which... I always forget how stressful moving is, but it's a lot. Moving's a lot. I moved. I am officially a graduate student, which is very exciting and very daunting. And, you know, a lot of work, which is also one of the reasons that we are likely to only be releasing, you know, a singular episode, is just because I have so much homework. I also got a new job, so that on top of being a grad student.
And is there one other thing you want to share with the people?
You have been hounding me to share this information.
I just feel like they deserve to know at this point.
I have a new boyfriend, so that's also... an exciting thing.
Yes. Can you tell the fact that he did not know all of your secrets?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So this isn't shame. This isn't embarrassment. This is just like,
how do you even get there with this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So he doesn't really use social media at all, which I very much enjoy. He doesn't have Instagram. He doesn't do the social medias. And so he didn't know that I had a podcast. And I never told him. And then, it got to the point where it was like, I wasn't like actively hiding the information. I was just like trying to see how long I could go without there being a conversation about it. A couple of weeks ago, through a series of events, it came out and he thought it was very funny, and he was like, well, I kind of knew that. And I was like, but we never... No, you didn't. Like, you're lying. You didn't know that. And he thought it was cool, and was like, oh, can I be a guest at some point? Don't know if that's ever going to happen, but maybe you guys will meet him.
Yes.
He's also never really watched Criminal Minds, and I don't think he really plans to.
Also, the funniest thing was very early on in your relationship. I think you told him that you were, like, helping me record someday or something. And you were like, oh, I need something to watch. And he was like, well, what about that show Criminal Minds? Didn't you say you liked it? Don't you? You should watch that. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, he has no fucking idea. And so she, like, FaceTimes me. Like, I've just had sex. You know, I'm like butt ass naked, which just seems to be a theme with our FaceTiming. And I pick up and it's, thank God, it's just my face. But he's there and he's just like laughing. And she's like, oh my God, you know, tell them about the podcast. And I was like, it's not that she's like a guest host on the podcast. Like, this is her podcast. Like, she's the co-founder. Like, it's not, you know, anyways, I thought that was pretty fucking funny.
What else?
Well, I still have the same job, still have the same husband.
Imagine if you were, like, actually new husband guy.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I've been writing my little book and, you know, really enjoying the time off and, you know, not to say that, like, I don't love doing this, but I feel like I set unrealistic expectations for me, for myself, with things. And then I'm like, I'm very stressed. And it's like, well, you know, you decided that you were going to produce and edit 2 episodes a week. Like, nobody asked you to do this. So I probably like 6 hours to edit each episode. So that's like a fucking part-time job.
It's a lot, but you know what's really cool is that you get it done, and you get it done when you tell people you're going to get it done.
I'm always very surprised when I do it and when it's done, and a lot of the time it's kind of like a little last minute, and I'm like, like, got to get it done, can't have sex with you right now, husband, you know, I need to like this shit. But yeah, so I mean, that I've just been like chilling, like that's my thing, which is a good thing for me. To do some chilling.
Yes. A break is always good.
A break is always good. And we will get to the episode, but because it's been a while since we recorded, we asked people to write in if they had like questions, and people did. Hiya, baby.
Hey, baby girl. We need to talk.
PG or NC-17?
You're on speakerphone.
I charge extra for groups.
Our first question is, what is your favorite Criminal Minds episode with a heart?
People are not going to agree with this, but the episode where she turns the people into dolls. I love that shit.
That was really good.
I think it's such a good episode. It's so creepy. I feel like they do such a good job explaining her backstory because it's such a bizarre premise. Like, is it the one where she's, I think she's schizophrenic or she's bipolar, and her father like gave her shock therapy when she was younger because he was like abusing her. And so she kidnaps women who look like these 3 dolls. And then she like, you know, has them like kind of paralyzed as the doll. I don't know. I just think it's fucking creepy. And I really, really like that episode. I'm not saying it's the best episode ever, but there's just something about it that always like stays with me. And I got to admit, like, as a bigger woman, I love seeing bigger women in roles of power on television. And I really enjoy seeing the Utsub in that episode. As a bigger woman, shining,
yeah,
doing her thing and succeeding.
I'm trying to, like, I feel like I'm blanking on a lot of episodes right now. What are ones that I really liked?
You really, really liked that. Like, I'm trying to think of episodes that wouldn't be, like acclaimed episodes so we can kind of be, like, a little fun. You really, really, really liked that fire episode with that guy.
Abby.
Yeah, Abby.
I can't remember what it was called, but yeah, that one was really good.
And that was one that I wasn't as into.
Dante.
Oh, that's a good one.
I keep referencing that episode with my new roommates because I was trying to explain, like, dressing in a counterculture, like, aesthetic. And the way I described it was like, well, you know, they're not the kind of person who would have worn arm warmers. All right. Our next question is not a question, but I want to be on your podcast. Hee hee.
All right. We will reach out to you and see if we can set that up. Yeah. Yeah.
The next one is there an episode that you're really looking forward to? I haven't seen the rest of the show, but I do know that Aubrey Plaza is in the later seasons, and I'm really excited for her because I love Aubrey Plaza.
I'm going to say the puppet episode. Is it called The Lesson? I forget what it's called. That is one of my favorite episodes. I would say it's one of the ones that Goobs directs, so you know it's a fucked up one. I think that that's a pretty infamous episode. I believe it's in season 7. It is fucking terrifying. It is very, very uncomfortable. I think about it all the time, and it shakes me to my core. So that's one that I'm very hyped about us covering.
I've seen discourse about it online, so I'm excited. All right, next question is, what do you think the most underrated Criminal Minds scene is? Hee hee, I love you, girlies. Love you too, girlie.
I'm thinking about The Fox, where the woman's ex-husband, Eric, is brought in for questioning, and they're saying, you know, did you murder your ex-wife and her new family? And the actor is just so good. He's so good. So that's one I think about. And then I also think about the Will Wheaton episode where the guy is like killing the couples in his creepy hotel and the unsub is Will Wheaton and the plaid and everything. One of the couples, I think it's one, the woman's father, one of the ones who died, comes in and he just gives a really stunning performance as well. And I think it's like these bit parts where people are just acting their hearts out are like not given enough credit. And those ones like really stick out in my mind. I think the father of the kid in Mosley Lane gets a lot of credit for his couple of lines, but there's some other like really great grieving actors and actresses in this show that don't get the props.
I'm thinking about the one, the like hunting one with the two brothers who are hunting people, and like when one of them is killed or injured at the end and the more submissive brother is like losing it. That was really good.
Yeah, yeah. And then Gideon was Gideon was pretty great in that episode too. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the Anthrax episode, too, I just think is really, really good, and I don't see a lot of, like, discourse about it. All right, this is a question from Jonah. Shout out, Jonah.
Jonah!
Jonah was great on the trivia episode.
Jonah is going to be on an upcoming episode.
And Jonah wants to know what our most unhinged prediction for season 16 is.
This is not an unhinged prediction, but let Emily Prentice kiss a woman. Like, come on.
Oh my God,
on.
Please.
Like, that's all I want. I don't care about any of the other shit. I just want her to kiss a woman on the mouth.
I feel like the new season is gonna be, like, uncomfortably woke.
Yes, yes. Oh my God, yes, yes.
Like, not saying that being woke is a bad thing, but I think it's going to be almost, like, too self-aware.
Yeah, it'll get to be, like, a Law and Order episode where you're like, you guys. Or, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that most recent season, was just very uncomfortable. They were like, cops are bad, but we're cops, but we're bad. And I'm like, oh, like literally, I know we're just being chatty, but it is what it is. Rosa literally was like, I want to be on the show, but I don't want to be a cop. So they made her a private investigator and she's still in every episode. She just didn't want to be a cop. And I'm like, shout out ACAB.
Like, we're gonna see members of the BAU with, like, BLM magnets at their desks. And then, like we'll see, like, Reed and Prentice with, like, a pride flag, but, like, they're never gonna address it.
God, that would make me so sad. And the other thing is, like, this show does get a lot more people of color centric in later seasons. And there's some like really great main cast members that come on. So it's not just white and Derek. There's a difference between saying Black Lives Matter and then like actually making a meaningful statement about it.
Right. Like we hope it just isn't virtue signaling. And that actually kind of dovetailed into the last question, which was how are you feeling about the new season happening? Yeah, and that kind of answered that. I'm excited, but I still have like 10 more seasons or so to get through. So
maybe there's a way that we can engage with the community while that's happening. You know, obviously we won't be able to like release episodes about it, but you know, maybe we can. I don't know.
Patreon.
Yeah. Or like maybe we do like it plays in the background and we just comment on it. Like, I don't know. Or like figure out some way that we can, you know, bring that in because that's going to be really popular and lots of people are going to be engaging with it.
And lastly, sorry, there was another one, which is what did you guys do on your break and did you have fun? Yes. And we kind of already covered that.
Yes.
But
I had a great time. I watched a lot of F-Boy Island. I love F-Boy Island. I'm now obsessed with Formula One. It went from, you know, the beginning of the break being like, oh, my husband's just watching it, to watching the Netflix TV show, to like watching it every week, to being disappointed that he's away right now so I can't watch it as it's happening. Charles Leclerc better fucking get a podium or I'm going to jump off a bridge. That's all I have to say.
I kind of already answered as well, but like I did watch Invincible.
Woohoo! Oh, it's so good.
I'm now watching Disenchantment. I'm on a like animation kick right now.
Girl, I think we got to get to the episode.
Yeah, I think we should. This is the longest night after we've done the longest intro.
Hiya, baby.
Hey, baby girl, we need to talk.
PG or NC-17?
You're on speakerphone.
I charge extra for groups.
Do you want to share the rating criteria?
So, yeah, our rating criteria hasn't changed, but in case you forgot, because it's been a hot minute. Wait, hold on.
What?
We have to talk about the biggest news.
Oh my God, girl, I forgot.
The biggest news here is that we have some new merch. But the reason for having this new merch, I'm going to let Mac talk about it because we've been fucking even though I was the one to say it in the episode, we have been vindicated.
So, guys, remember when we didn't know where Canada was in relation to Detroit? If you're a new listener, I mean, you have to go back and listen to that episode. It's the pig farmer episode. I think it's like probably the end of season 4 or like the beginning of season 5 or some shit like that. Go back and listen to it where we were like, there's no way Canada is 3 miles from Detroit. So we made fun of it in the episode.
I Googled it and we looked it up.
When Abigail typed it into Google, it said 1,405 miles. And, you know, we're in the middle of recording. Like, we don't, you know, we're not claiming to be researchers. So then we just announced it. And then everyone was like, actually, girls, there's a bridge, besties.
Everyone was like, hey, guys, you're so dumb.
Yeah, you don't know basic geography.
And I'm like, you know what? I was homeschooled. I can live with that.
I can. The public school system failed me. But to be fair, I was from a town that had, I had to pass 3 different sets of cow farmers on my way to school. So I'm not saying it was the most highbrow, hootin'-falutin' institution.
Metropolitan.
Obviously, since then, we found out that that's not true, but it is like kind of a crazy situation. Like, how did we even get to this number? And then someone tweeted at us and was like, hey, if you search it on Google, it does say 1,405 miles. So we feel very vindicated that that's how we got to that answer. Obviously, we know it's wrong. But it is comforting that someone got the same exact answer we did. And when I told my husband this, he was like, it's not about being vindicated. It's about the American school system failing you, which is
okay.
It's okay, but we were vindicated.
It's good to know that because we said it with our chest.
Yeah, we did.
And we're so wrong.
I know.
That there are literal grounds for us to be wrong, given that the internet did lie.
Yes. And to be honest, like I you know, I couldn't really tell you where Detroit is on a map. Like, I'm sorry, guys. Like, listen, I can record and release and edit 2 episodes a week, but I can't. Basic geography is too much for me, guys. Thank God my job has nothing to do with that. And I'm so sorry, Canada, and so sorry, Detroit. And if I ever go there, I will go on the bridge and it'll be a whole thing. I will Instagram live going over the bridge.
Record an episode from the bridge. Yes.
Hi, I'm here at the bridge. Hey, bitch. Well, you can get the merch. Oh,
yeah, get the merch. It's on RT Public Shop and it's on sale right now as we record, but probably not by the time this is released.
Yeah, but I mean, the shirts are reasonably priced, but we also have mugs and stickers, and you know, we know things are expensive, so you don't have to buy it if you don't want to.
So now we should get into the episode.
Okay, that's fair.
Our reading criteria has not changed, even if we have individuals have since we did this. I'm a changed woman now that I've been vindicated. So our reading criteria is as follows. Each category, there's 5 categories. Each category can get 20 points, giving each episode the potential to have 100 points. The criminal / serial killer, character development / character arcs, forensics / context, script writing, and background characters.
And we are in no way, shape, or form associated with the television show Criminal Minds. We're just big fans. And because we did have a big season break, I really considered going back and doing a last season on Criminal Minds and talking about season 5. But we end with a pretty big cliffhanger. So I didn't want to, I mean, this is already going to be a long ass episode with lots of chatting. So I just focused on the cliffhanger and recapping that to get us up to speed, because it's very necessary for you to understand this episode, if anyone can understand this episode.
It's not a great episode.
It's not. And I just want to give a trigger warning for Leonard Cohen. If you're like me and his voice just makes your vagina clamp up, I'm so sorry, and you might want to skip this episode.
There's a lot of Leonard Cohen Cohening.
Dance me to the rear. All right, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna get into it. So, previously on Criminal Minds, T. Curry, as in Tim Curry, as in Rocky Horror Picture Show, Tim Curry. I'll put that little clip in here of him doing his best.
How'd you do, I? So you've met my faithful handyman. He's just a little broad dime, because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
He's in the house, guys. The BAU heads to LA Law to go after kind of like, they're doing like a Night Stalker-esque serial killer who's basically wreaking havoc during rolling blackouts. LA County has instituted these blackouts because there's a heat wave, and if everyone's on and there's no blackouts, the whole power grid's going to go down. So wherever LA County turns the power off for the night, that's where T. Curry goes. So he's like very like in, it's not like Unsubs be streaming. It's like Unsubs be podcasting, because he's very involved in the radio and listening, and
he's riding those radio waves.
So he shows up and he just murders people and he rapes people and it's awful. And sometimes he leaves little babies. Sometimes he doesn't.
They also, like, really did the most with his teeth in the episode. So it's just, like, I love Tim Curry, but I did not love looking at him in this episode.
This character, this Unsub, is kind of like, he's got the reflexes of the Flash, you know? He's everywhere at once. He's like Spider-Man. He's climbing up the walls. He's doing this and that. And Tim Curry as a person is very ill.
He's not a spring chicken.
He's not. And he, you could see that he's not exact, he's not well in this episode that they're recording. So there's going to be some references throughout this recording where he's popping up and like just out of thin air, he's there. And it's like, it's not like, I had a real problem with that. And I still have a real problem with that, because he's scary enough and his performance does enough without having to like make him super fast. Like, it adds nothing to the plot of this episode. So the BAU meet Agent Spicer, who I don't know if I stressed it enough. The man is hot.
He's hot.
He's really fucking hot. And we spend a lot of time with Agent Spicer and his partner, Agent Kurzbard, a.k.a. Kurz. And the long and short of it is, after all this investigation and all of this stuff, the BAU realizes that T. Curry is, like, obsessed with Spicer.
I mean, when the man looks like that.
Holy shit. I know, he's really hot.
I'm back with zingers, motherfuckers.
I know, you're fucking riding high. It's 10 a.m. and we're
it's that graduate zesty school education.
Oh my
big brain.
God. Yeah, he's very sexy. But his very sexy parents were some of T. Curry's first victims, and Spicer, for whatever reason, lived. He survived. He was actually the first baby that T. Curry, or basically the first survivor that T. Curry left alive. And we don't know why, but he did. So now T. Curry believes that Spicer's success as a cop is because T. Curry let him live. So T. Curry's like, that's my boy. But T. Curry's also like, I'm not getting the recognition that I deserve as, like, the man behind the curtain for T. Spicer. Oh, for T. Spicer. For Spicer. So, T. Curry.
That's the ship name.
T. Spicer. Oh, my goodness. So, T. Curry kidnaps Spicer's daughter, Ellie, who's 8 years old. And I have a lot to say about this child actress. And then also kidnaps Spicer's sister, Kristen. Everyone breaks up into little groups, and they're all going to try to find T. Curry. And Spicer and Morgan go and they find T. Curry at the house. I call it the Spicer family murder house. And if this recap sounds convoluted, just wait until you get to the episode, okay? So they go to the house where Spicer's family was murdered all those years ago in Santa Monica. And T. Curry, like, quickly incapacitates Morgan and ties him up and then takes Spicer's gun and shoots him. But not before Spicer's like, Morgan, promise me you'll take care of Ellie. And then the child actress who plays Ellie, who is really bad at not breaking character and just basically spends the entire episode smiling and giggling, is like a crying, smiling, giggling while her father is being murdered. There's a blackout. The entire city is offline. T. Curry takes Ellie and just yeets into the night. Spicer is dead on the floor. And the BAU is like, where the fuck did Morgan and Spicer go? Everything's offline. And this is where we come in.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say that the first half of this story arc rocked. This, not so much. And we're coming in pretty hot. We're listening to Leonard Cohen. I'm so sorry, everyone. I don't want to be here either.
I went down to the place where I knew she lay waiting, under the marble and the snow. I said, Mother, I'm frightened, the thunder and the lightning. I'll never come through this alone. She said, I'll be with you, my shawl wrapped around you, my hand on your head when you go.
We're in a field and we're watching this boy standing by a tree. But it's not a real field. It's kind of like CGI, or it's got some sort of shitty effect, and it's pretty trippy. Like, the sky is very blue. The field is very, like, wheat-colored. I don't know. And there's a woman, and she's standing behind the boy, and I guess it's his mother. And then the boy smiles, and he's got rotten teeth, and we're like, oh, man. So that's T. Curry as a child. We learned that LA County, their power grid has just overloaded and completely gone down. And there's no cell service, no AC. It's just a bad time. And we're still in Santa Monica, and T. Curry has taken Ellie, and he's McFreaking murdered Sexy Spicer. And I put in here a note about the fact that this child actress cannot keep a straight face, especially when she's working with T. Curry.
In her defense, I don't think I would be able to keep a straight face while working with T. Curry either.
Yeah, I put a note that it seemed like he's probably a lot of fun to work with. I feel bad for her because she's really trying hard. And it's not as egregious the rest of the episode, but any scene when it's her and T. Curry, she just can't keep a straight face. I bet he was really fun to work with. So Ellie has somehow escaped T. Curry, and she's just, like, running through the streets.
I'm sorry, she's on the lam.
And T. Curry is in a van, in his, like, creepy murder van, and he's just, like, chasing after her. And Ellie bangs on the first door of that first house she sees, and a man and a woman answer. And Ellie is, like, hysterical, and she's begging to come into the house.
He's coming! Please, let me in.
Stop.
Let me in.
Okay, I'll call the police, okay? Do not let her in the house.
And the woman is like, oh, it's a frightened child. Let's bring her inside. And the husband is like, call the police. Do not let her in the house. I don't trust this tiny child.
Interesting reaction.
Yeah, very interesting reaction. But apparently he's right, because T. Curry comes up and McFreaking shoots him. And then Ellie's like, oh my God. And T. Curry comes out of nowhere, because remember, he's Spider-Man. And then we kind of fade to black with dramatic opera music.
I love myself a good dramatic opera music moment.
So the BAU and Detective Kurzbard quickly ascertain that T. Curry took Spicer's sister Kristen and Ellie to the house in Santa Monica. And I wrote, in real life, Netflix would have pissed themselves to get the documentary rights for the Spicer family murder house. They would have been on that shit.
Spicer's sister's not in her apartment. The building manager said she left hours ago.
Morgan and Spicer?
No one's been in or out since the power went down.
Morgan said they were coming here.
And he was a lot closer than any of us.
Something must have changed.
The cells are down. Now how the hell do we find them?
What would cause Morgan to change his mind like that when he knows he can't tell us?
Unsub had Spicer's sister and daughter. Morgan knew he didn't have a lot of time.
So his first guess had to be right.
The Unsub attacked Spicer specifically through his family.
How long has Spicer's sister lived here?
6-7 months.
Well, that's why they didn't come here.
If the Unsub wants to hurt Spicer, he'll do it someplace that means something to him. Morgan must have realized the same thing.
The Unsub and Spicer do share one place in common.
Santa Monica.
Where he killed his parents.
Let's go.
So Morgan and Kristen are still tied up there, and they're right next to Spicer's dead body. And Kristen is having like a panic attack, understandably. And Morgan is like, hang on now. I know we're both tied up and your brother's dead body is right over there. But how about a cognitive interview?
Morgan's timing, impeccable.
And Kristen has no choice but to agree. So Morgan is asking her what she remembers about Tim Curry. And she says, I don't want to remember. She was kidnapped, beaten, sexually assaulted, and had her beloved brother murdered in front of her. And remember, like, their parents were killed years ago. Like, that was her family. And because Morgan can't read a fucking room, she has to answer his stupid questions. She tells Morgan that T. Curry has been traveling around in an RV, which is news to me because I thought it was a van. But specifically, it is an old, filthy RV.
That's not very subtle.
No. I kind of want it on a t-shirt.
Old, filthy RV?
Yeah. Hashtag.
We could throw it on a t-shirt.
So we cut to T. Curry and Ellie in the old, filthy RV. And Ellie realizes that T. Curry let her get away on purpose, knowing that she would run to the house for help, and then T. Curry could just pick the residents off. And then Ellie is like, I'm responsible. And T. Curry is like, we're going to make a great team, Pulpit. So Hotch, Prentice, and Kurz roll up to this murder house that we've been hearing all this buzz about.
Spicer, Kurz, we got here as fast as we could. What about Kristen? She was beaten and sexually assaulted. She's out in the ambulance. And you already know the bad guy took Ellie with him. One more thing. There was another couple murdered a mile from here an hour ago. We've got a team there, but we're pretty sure it was the same guy.
How is he?
It's nothing, Hotch.
He needs a CAT scan, stitches, and a lot of rest.
She's right, Morgan.
Guys, I'm not going to any hospital until we find that little girl. Now, please, just put a bandage on it.
Morgan, what's the notebook?
I asked his sister to tell me everything she could remember about the Unsub.
And what's her condition?
It's bad.
I'll go check on her.
Kurz is devastated to learn that his partner Spicer was murdered. And one of the detectives who gets to the crime scene first tells Hotch and Kurz that there's actually been another murder. The couple that Elliot asked for help, their bodies have been found. Morgan is refusing medical attention, insisting that he won't go to the hospital until they locate Ellie.
The BAU, I'm like, you guys have fucking banging health insurance. Go to the hospital.
And Hotch is like, okay, because remember when Prentice was literally in a car accident and still went to work? Capitalist hellhole, okay. Prentice continues to question Spicer's sister, Kristen. Kristen takes off her oxygen mask to tell Prentice that T. Curry always listens to the radio. He's got to have his radio. Garcia calls Morgan and says, baby boy, you all good? And I wrote, no, bitch, he was just held hostage and Spicer was murdered.
He's fine, though. He doesn't need medical attention.
Garcia.
Baby boy, you all good?
Listen, I need you to run something for me.
You really had us worried, and by us, I mean me. I don't know where you were.
Now, Garcia.
Okay.
All right, I'm looking for an old RV. Partial California plates, Michael David 3. That's all she was able to get. The victim thinks it may have been the first three letters of the plate, but she's not sure.
Yes, sir.
All right, call me back on this number as soon as you get a bite. You know, she really needs to be more professional sometimes.
She gets the job done every time.
And the next notes I took were, insert T. Curry and Ellie scene here. The big takeaways are, one, T. Curry is God. T. Curry cuts Ellie's hair and changes her clothes, and that he kills someone who's changing a flat tire. Back at Lapid headquarters,
Lapid.
Garcia calls to tell the T that there are zero RVs with the partial license plate that Kristen gave them. Morgan yells at Garcia and hangs up on her. And then the BAU tries to figure out how to get T. Curry, and they circle back to the fact that he loves listening to the radio. But trouble is, they don't know what radio station he specifically listens to. And then JJ suggests using the emergency alert system, which is going to become like a character within its own right in this episode. We then get another T. Curry Child in the Field Leonard Cohen montage.
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in.
T. Curry pulls up to a house and uses like a broken bicycle ruse to get the homeowner to open his door. And the man is like, "What did you do to my son's bicycle?" And T. Curry is like, "Ran over it twice." Which has the same vibes as, "He ran into my knife. He ran into my knife 10 times.
Right.
And so T. Curry kills the man, and then he gets Allie out of the car and is like, "Okay, you're going to wrangle the son whose bicycle I just destroyed." And then T. Curry like goes to the boy's mother and ties her up. And it looks like he kills her, or she's passed out or something. And he gets her on the bed, and then he's like, "Ellie, put that little boy in the closet so he can watch me terrorize his mother." And then as T. Curry's getting ready to like do his thing, he notices that there's like a picture by the bedside and that there are two sons in the household, not one. So he realizes that Ellie knows this and that Ellie has like already told the other son to like go tell the police and that she's fucked him. Just like Ferrari fucked Charles Leclerc this season. And Ellie is like, "Oh yeah, I told the younger brother to go tell the neighbors and call the police. Can't kill them all, can you?" And T. Curry is like, "I can try." Meanwhile, JJ is trying to get a hold of someone who can grant the FBI access to the emergency alert system. And she keeps being put on hold and she's like getting pissed.
"Every time they put me on hold, I get one layer higher at Homeland Security. The EAS is coordinated by the FCC, FEMA, and the National Weather Service. It's a bureaucratic pile of steaming..."
"Hey, ma'am."
"Yes."
"Thank you for holding."
"Yes, I'm with the FBI. We're here in Los Angeles."
"A boy just woke up his neighbors. He said he escaped from the Prince of Darkness."
"What?"
"He said they're still in his house right now."
"They?"
"There's a girl with him."
The BAU head to the house, and T. Curry and Ellie are... They get into the car that was owned by the family, and I guess the neighborhood watch is like rallying around and they're all outside the house and they're like, "Let's get this fucking Night Stalker guy." Curry literally reverses through a garage door to get away.
We've been there. We've all been there.
This is the point in the episode where I start to lose it a little bit, okay? Okay, so the BAU has Curry's ratty old RV because he left it behind, and they go in and they find his crack paraphernalia. And also, T. Curry cut Ellie's hair. We know this. But he just, like, left her hair on the floor? Like, I know that hygiene and cleanliness are not high on his list of priorities, but I was like, "Oh my God, can we just throw it in the trash?" Just, like, go throw it in the trash. Like, pick it up, throw it in the trash. I can't handle it. If there's trash on the floor, throw it out. Oddly enough, this is not what sends me. This is not what shoots me into the stratosphere, okay? So I'm already on edge between Leonard Cohen and the fucking dead hair on the floor.
This episode really was not for you.
No, not at all. Morgan realizes that Ellie was T. Curry's target all along, not Spicer. They think that T. Curry thinks he's like Ellie's grandfather.
Stop.
They literally say it.
Shut up.
Because if he had killed Spicer, Spicer wouldn't have had a baby with a woman. So he's basically her grandparent.
He wasn't after Spicer.
We were just coming to the same conclusion.
It doesn't make sense. He hasn't killed the girl if she wasn't what he was after.
He disguised her to keep her.
Look at this. There's a stack of them in the RV. Reed's reading them all right now.
So, we profiled his obsession with Spicer. Was over not getting credit for his law enforcement career. But maybe it's the daughter he's not getting credit for.
He thinks he's responsible for her.
Well, she wouldn't even be here if he hadn't allowed Spicer to live 25 years ago.
A bastardized version of a grandparent.
That's a pretty twisted delusion.
Well, it only has to make sense to him.
And when a delusion like that crashes, it crashes hard.
This is one of the most unhinged things Criminal Minds writers have ever thought of. I cannot think of a crazier thing to come out of these people's mouths. Now we got to get back to feminist icon, the emergency broadcast system. I'm going to put the quote in here because this becomes like a very JJ heavy episode. Basically, she gets really snappy and she's like, I need to talk to someone now.
I'm not going to explain this entire thing again to another mid-level bureaucrat who can't give me a sufficient answer. Put someone on the damn phone who can authorize what I need.
And then she gets someone who authorizes her. And then she's like, Hotch, I got the emergency alert system. And he's like, okay, JJ, you're going to be the hostage negotiator. And she's like, I'm not a hostage negotiator. And he goes, I'm sorry, you are today. So it's the next day. And T. Curry and Ellie are like bickering in the car like an old married couple. And T. Curry is like, why did you do this? And Ellie's like, we're not a team. And T. Curry, like, genuinely is hurt. And he goes, I was nice to you. So there's more Leonard Cohen. This time it's Sisters of Mercy. Like, we're getting a lot of different songs.
All the Sisters of Mercy, they are not departed or gone. They were waiting for me. And I thought that I just can't go on.
And we're seeing the CGI and the wheat fields and the tree and the baby boy.
That part, I didn't emphasize or say this before. That part really took me out. The whole, I was like, are we getting like biblical? Is that what we're trying to do?
The worst part is that this is not the last Leonard Cohen song that we hear in this episode.
I'm sorry for your loss.
It is bonkers. I don't think they've ever done that with a single artist where they've had that many. And of course, it's Leonard Cohen. Like,
they didn't even give Dante that much music.
I know. Oh, my God. Yeah, he just got to sing Love Will Tear Us Apart, and that was it.
Justice for Dante.
Gavin Rosdale, a young buck Gavin Rosdale, could get it. So T. Curry is dancing with his mother in the field, and she's wearing like a white robe. And then there's like a knock at the door, and suddenly we realize that they're just dancing to Leonard Cohen and in an apartment, like in a bedroom. And dancing time is over, and the mother is like yanking, she's like yeeting Tim Curry into this closet, and she's like, get inside. And she kind of shuts the door, but she doesn't like shut the door. And she takes off her robe, and the implication is that she is about to have sex with someone. And because it's Criminal Minds, the other implication is that she is a sex worker. And T. Curry is going to now have to watch his mother do this, which is terrible. And T. Curry is hallucinating while this is happening. And he actually says out loud in the car to Ellie, get inside and don't come out until I call you, which is what his mother told him. And Ellie's like, bro, like, what the fuck? And then Garcia calls and she has finally figured out who the unsub is. She found a 40-year-old murder that was, quote, quite the scandal. And Kurz, who's on the line, is like, for the 60s, that's saying something. And Garcia is like, I don't know who just talked, but okay. And I'm like, Garcia, it's Kurzbart. It's Detective Kurzbart. Like, girl, we've been over this.
This murder was quite the scandal.
So Southern California in the 60s, that's saying something.
Okay, I don't know who was talking right then, but word. So Nora Flynn was a prostitute and a drug addict living in a desert community just outside of Los Angeles. It appears bikers were her stock in trade, rough bikers. And one fateful day, her and a client were murdered by her 13-year-old son, Billy, shot to death. The customer, ironically named John, was able to tell the police before he died that Billy made him beg for his life, but then shot him anyway.
That's him.
Mm-hmm. And he was convicted, but...
He's a juvenile.
Right. So at 18, he was released in 1973, never heard from again.
Oh, he was heard from.
And he never released a statement as to why he killed them, although it does appear his childhood was horrific. I'm sending you a picture of him on the day he was released to your PDAs.
Crazy prediction for the new season of Criminal Minds is that they will not shit on sex workers.
I feel like they still will, unfortunately, but I hope they don't.
That's my unhinged prediction, because if they finally turn it around and start treating sex workers with respect, I will have nothing to complain about. People of color, LGBTQ plus representation, and stop treating sex workers like shit. I don't even know if we'd be able to record a podcast anymore.
Honestly.
Morgan apologizes to Garcia for yelling at her, and she's like, it's fine, you're stressed. Hotch coaches JJ on the emergency broadcasting system, and we keep cutting back here in between all the action. And I'm like, let's just drop the new track already, JJ. Like, let's just hear this recording. Stop Frank Oceaning us. And JJ starts talking to T. Curry on the radio. And T. Curry gets confused because JJ's like, Billy Flynn, if you're listening. And he's like, Ellie, did you say something to me? And she's like, no, bro. No, she goes, who's Billy Flynn? It's the radio. And he's like, oh, that's right. It's the radio. I'm sorry, guys. It's not a great episode. I do love T. Curry, though. He's really killing it. I'm just sorry that the rest of the episode can't step up to the plate and, you know, do him justice.
Mr. Flynn, I don't know for sure that you can hear me, but
my name is Jennifer Giroux. I work for the FBI as a communications liaison for the behavioral... Okay, Mr. Flynn, I want to talk to you about letting Ellie Spicer go.
I know that this is supposed to be a really empowering few minutes and this monologue, but I thought it was really quite bad. I thought that the writing of this was really, really underscoring the whole purpose of this. They were trying to make it seem casual and kind of off the cuff, but I think it just made JJ sound terrible. And at least we forget she's literally like, I was going to say their social media person. No, she's like their media communications liaison. You tell me she can't talk to people? It didn't feel genuine. So she goes, I'm not a hostage negotiator. Actually, I've never done anything like this at all. And I'm like, girl, shut up. Don't say that on the emergency broadcast system for all of LA County to hear. And then she goes, you can tell I'm not a hostage negotiator. And I'm like, girl, I didn't until you kept bringing it up.
I'm not a hostage negotiator. But I am a mother. And I know what your mother did to you when you were little.
And she's basically like, Billy, baby, you have mommy issues. But I could be your new mommy. And if you think I'm joking, I will put the clip in right here.
If I could somehow go back there and, you know, make what was happening to you stop. If I could just, you know, pick you up and just tell you that I'll be okay. That's what moms are supposed to do.
I wrote, this is really bad writing. We get montages of everyone listening to JJ and being like, wow, for someone who's not a hostage negotiator, she's pretty good at this. And it goes on forever. And again, she's their media liaison. So I don't believe that she's not capable of doing this. And I just, it just feels like they're being like, women who are mothers can't be hostage negotiators. Like, it feels a little sexist. Maybe I'm reaching too far. I want to hear your thoughts. I did not feel that it was an empowering moment for JJ. And in the scope of what happens in this season, which we will talk about a lot next episode, it's not a good look. Anyway, this works. T. Curry lets Ellie go. And we do learn at the same time that Spicer's sister, Kristen, has died from blunt force trauma. So I guess Morgan is Ellie's father now. There's a standoff. T. Curry goes into a house and holds some people at gunpoint. And he's like, hey, can you guys send Morgan in? I want to talk to Morgan. So Morgan goes in there. Remember, they've already like talked. They already know the deal. And there's some very bad modern art on the walls in this house that T. Curry has locked himself in. And he's tied up the wife and the husband, who I guess bought this bad art. And Morgan's like, it's over, Flynn. And T. Curry is like, my mother used to dance with me. And I'm like, the mommy issues are abundant and this is bad. But ultimately, T. Curry points a gun at Morgan, so Morgan shoots him. And again, I don't know why we're here, but there's more Leonard Cohen. It's a different song. It's Who's by Fire?
Who by fire? Who by water? Who in the sunshine? Who in the nighttime?
And Morgan has a moment with Ellie. And again, the actress is just smiling after hearing that her grandparents are dead. Her father is dead. Her mother is not, they don't know where the mother is. Her aunt Kristen is dead and she is just smiling. And I'm like, this actress is trying so hard, but this is not good.
It's really not the strongest opening for a new season for Criminal Minds.
I just rewatched season 6 and I'm on season 7 now. And I would say that this is probably the worst episode in season 6, if not like the second worst episode.
At least, like, again, I feel like this isn't the like actual opening of the season, because this is like wrapping up the last season with this two-parter. The next episode's really good.
Yeah, I mean, my one complaint for this season is that all of the unsubs are white men with brown hair. Like, that's what it is. I would say it's 95% of them, which we will have a sound effect.
I think not.
And I would say that this stays true in this episode as well, and in the next one that we cover. But just get ready for the white men brown hair combo.
I think not.
My deep dive is pretty brief because I knew we were going to be freaking chatty this episode and didn't want this to be a, like, mammoth of an episode. I'm just talking a little bit about Leonard Cohen since Mac loves him so very much.
I'm sorry. I mean, I don't really know much about him. Hallelujah is a great song. I just find his voice to be a lot. And as someone who taught voice, it just sounds like he's hurting himself. And I just can't listen to it. But I guess maybe there are other reasons to hate Leonard Cohen that I'm going to find out about.
So I actually kind of like Leonard Cohen.
Oh my god, girl, no! No! Bitch, how could you? I feel betrayed.
I'm sorry. I don't have, like, super, like, I don't know a lot of his music, but
Well, you do now.
Basically, apparently, this is an article about him from Sharp magazine that is basically being like, he sucks. One of the criticisms they say in this article, which we'll link, is that he treats his women as, like, set pieces. Like, they're like, young ingenues are tragic seductresses. His many love affairs were the stuff of legend. So, too, were his failed relationships for fans. His romantic and sexual exploits were a source of fascination, but for those who didn't buy the act, he could seem like any other caddish, entitled man. They also say, according to McLean's article from 1978, Cohen decided to become a songwriter while watching strangers fuck. He and a partner were at Toronto's King Edward Hotel in 1965, and the door to the adjoining room was open. He started singing the lines of his poems, adjusting his rhythm to the movements of the lovers next door. In that instant, he had a revelation. He could sing for a living.
That's so creepy. Oh, I hate that. Ooh, okay, I'm going to come out on the side of I'm not a Leonard Cohen fan now.
Yeah, I'm like, is this real? Like, is this actually real? That's what I want to know. Like, who is the source for that? Did he say that? I don't know.
Also, you left out the funniest part after, you know, the revelation, perhaps he could sing for a living. In parentheses, it says his partner wasn't so sure.
Again, what's the source? What's the source?
Oh, my God.
There's also some, like, crime quote, though, or whatever, is basically in 2004, he discovered that, you know, in his finances, which he believed totaled over $5 million to fund his retirement.
So he went from $5 million to $150,000.
He was tipped off about the missing money by a quote, insider with loose ties to the Cohen's longtime friend, former lover and personal manager of 17 years, Kelly Lynch. He discovered there were like a bunch of improprieties with his accounts, including the fact that he had unknowingly paid Lynch's $75,000 American Express bill, and then he discovered this fact. Lynch tried to withdraw another $40,000 from his accounts. His legal team discovered an elaborate system of financial impropriety orchestrated by Lynch, which is terrible.
I have two last Leonard Cohen things, and I know I'm so chatty, but the first is that my former vocal coach taught a woman who had dated Leonard Cohen and claimed that Hallelujah was written about her. But, like, don't they all, right? Like, and my last thing, my husband a couple weeks ago was like, I have this song I really want you to hear. I think you'll like it. And then he turns it on, and it was
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in.
And I shrieked. We were in the car. I was like, turn this shit off right now. And he was like, what? I thought you would like it.
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin.
From this fucking episode, I do not want to hear another fucking word out of Leonard Cohen's mouth. I'm sorry. God, I'm coming down pretty hard on Leonard Cohen. I didn't even realize I felt this strongly until I'm saying it now to you all, but I'm not a fan. Sorry, Leonard. Or not sorry, depending on how much of a piece of shit you were. What do you think about the criminal / serial killer?
I mean, I want to give him 100 because it's Tim Curry, but again, it's pretty trying.
I think we could give him a 20 because the rest of this episode is not going to do well. And I do think that he's an incredible actor. And I think he's really trying very hard. You know, you can only do so much with what you're given.
Yeah. All right. Character development, character arcs. Morgan was an asshole.
He was, but he was kidnapped and watched someone die in front of him.
If I was kidnapped and watched someone die in front of me, I simply wouldn't be an asshole. That's a huge lie, but just had to say it.
I don't know. Like, I'm kind of, but he does apologize.
Yeah. 15?
Yeah.
Forensics and content.
T. Curry thinks he's Ellie's grandfather. It's awful. I would say give it a 5. I think it's very, yeah, very bad.
Script writing?
I would say a 5. I do not think this is a well-written script.
And then background characters. We didn't like Ellie, so 5.
The actress is trying so hard, but she's smile. But that hurts me because, like, I knew when I was really young and I was trying to act, I would smile all the time too. Like, you're just having so much fun. But it's just kind of dissonant when she's smiling and, like, her father is dead. Her aunt is dead. T. Curry is her grandfather. Like, you know,
You want to give it a 5, 7?
Give her a 7. I hope she's doing well and I hope she's killing it out there.
All right. That gives us a total of 52. We'll be right back.
have a very special guest next episode.
It's a really fun episode.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything else because it's really, really fun. If you want to support us, we do try to release episodes early on our Patreon. We are also opting into ads on our hosting service. Yeah. So the Patreon episodes won't have the ads. I mean, every download with an ad episode gets us like a cent, 1.2 cents. So we are trying to, at least get a little bit of money from that. So we hope you understand. But if you want ad-free episodes guaranteed on the Patreon, we try to drop them at least several days early. With only releasing one episode a week, I'm hoping I can start dropping them all a week early. Follow us on social podcasts everywhere. Follow me, yournewapartment.tumblr.com.
My podcast is in retirement. However, my new account that I'm actually active on is on Instagram, and it is called Little Gnome Facts. And I just really like gnomes, and I like to draw them, and I like to collect them. So if you would like to follow my account for some cute gnome content, please do. And if you have requests, please send them in. So little_gnome_facts.